The University of South Dakota has established a Center for Genetics and Behavioral Health. The center received a $3.4 million grant from the Governor's Research Center program over 5 years to study genetic and environmental influences that interact with other biological, psychological, and behavioral factors to impact post-traumatic stress disorders, or PTSD. Researchers will take a holistic approach to be able to determine if someone exposed to a traumatic event can develop severe PTSD.
If only the brain was less complicated than it is, it would be easier to figure it out.
SDPB's host of Innovation, Kara Hetland, met with the team of scientists who are studying everything from genetics to gut microbes in an attempt to identify people who may be prone to PTSD and identify screenings and earlier treatments.
For the purpose of this study, Lee Ba needs to be clear. Post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD, refers to any traumatic event. It can be witnessing violence, whether it's criminal, domestic, or an act of war. It can be sexual trauma or an automobile accident. What it isn't is serious heartache after a breakup, even though that is traumatic to some.
It's a much broader set of conditions that can result in the development of PTSD.
Lee Ba is an associate professor of neuroscience and basic biomedical sciences at the University of South Dakota School of Medicine. He says the study is made up of a broad group of investigators working on the same problem in South Dakota. Nationally, PTSD affects about 3.5% of the population. It's double that in South Dakota, and why Ba and his team are looking for better treatment options for those suffering from PTSD. He's clear scientists are still learning about the disorder.
That's what's really stumped a lot of treatment and identification of post-traumatic stress disorder is the fact that 50 to 60% of people may at some point in their lifetime be exposed to an event that could cause post-traumatic stress disorder, but a much smaller percentage actually go on to develop the full-blown symptoms. So we're looking to try and identify those individuals that are most likely to go on to identify or to develop post-traumatic stress disorder and then guide treatment based on this collection of information, the genetics, the psychological, the neuroimaging, to best tell what treatment is going to work well with these.
Participants in the study will give a blood sample, a stool sample, answer a whole lot of questions, and also agree to brain imaging. It's a little more complicated than that on the science side, but Zach King says it's pretty simple to get enrolled in the study. He's a clinical research coordinator for the Center for Genetics and Behavioral Health.
As long as they meet the criterion for inclusion, so there won't be any issue with the blood draw, they're an adult between the ages of 18 and 55, and they've experienced a significant traumatic event, then we set up time to talk to them.
King says participants need to travel to one of three locations, Vermilion, Yankton, or Sioux Falls. There's a stipend for participants, about $160, if they qualify for all of the different phases in the study. The goal is to enroll 325 participants over the next 5 years. So far, King says, they have five.
Definitely hesitant. No one wants to tell you their dirty secrets or admit weakness, especially because with PTSD, there is a large proportion of military veterans. There's a lot of hesitancy about, well, do I want to open up about this? There's a lot of concern about, well, this reported to like my higher ups and stuff like that.
King assures all information is kept confidential. King has a series of questions ranging from demographics to personality characteristics to medications. These questions determine if participants are invited for the next round. That involves more psychological testing and more details about the traumatic events in their lives. All qualifying participants will give a blood sample for genetic testing. Scientists want to know if specific markers could be used as a screening for PTSD in military recruits. Participants also give a stool sample. Learning about how the microbes in the gut interact with brain function is a new approach. Jamie Schall is research associate and project manager for the Center for Genetics and Behavioral Health. She says nobody really knows if there are specific strains or any one particular bacterium that's more important than the other in your gut or why.
So you hear a lot about probiotics, but what particular thing are we trying to promote? Is it the same for everybody? Is there something that would be more beneficial to people who have experienced one type of trauma over another, or people that would have comorbid symptoms with depression and PTSD? So just trying to look to see if there are relationships between the severity of mental disease and then the microorganisms, and if that could be something that could be used as a target for future healthcare and treatment.
Scholl says diet does play a role. She says the higher quality of food you eat and the more variety of food you eat, the better off you are. Highly processed food can dampen the diversity of your gut. There isn't any data, she says, on the difference between the microorganisms in a vegan versus a meat eater. She doesn't know which is better than the other. She only knows they're different. It's all data she looks forward to exploring in this study. The last phase of the study requires functional magnetic resonance imaging, or fMRI. This is a collection of low-resolution images of the brain very quickly that captures changes in blood oxygenation while participants complete a task. Lee Baugh says the tasks are themed around traumatic events. Participants will see a series of words and be asked to count how many words.
What we know from previous research is when those words are related to something that people have trauma centered around. So for example, if this individual came from a military context and the stimuli is the word mortar four times in a row, that's going to result in an increased reaction time. So it takes them longer to respond to that task.
They have a harder time counting the number of words in that situation. The scan shows their brain activity, and Ba says they see an elevated response in parts of the brain known to be associated with the assessment of threat.
By presenting stimuli that are related to these traumatic events and contrasting that activity to stimuli that people shouldn't have a stress response to, words like table or drawer, things that most people think are fairly dull and boring, we can actually look at the differences in brain activity when people are being exposed to these traumatic event-related words.
Ba says every participant will see words related to different traumatic events, and he predicts they react only to the event the participant experienced. Once all the data is collected from 325 participants, then the real fun begins, according to Lee Baugh.
So a large portion of this project involves coming up with ways to actually deal with all of that data. So for those that are familiar with, you know, the size of a DVD being 4.6 gigabytes, your computer today may have 1 or 2 terabytes of storage on it. We are talking about hundreds of terabytes of data that we're collecting to the point where we've had to upgrade the storage systems at the university campus to be able to hold all of the data that we're getting. And then we have to figure out some way to combine it.
Ba says they'll rely on the university computer science department to assist with how to use machine learning and classification algorithms to put the data together. This study is also part of the academics at the university, and one of the requirements of the governor grant is workforce development, giving STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math graduate students training from a different perspective. That's where this computer science analytics or communication classes may come in order. Brian Burrell is a professor of neuroscience division of basic biomedical sciences.
The benefit is to make a more broadly educated STEM graduate student so that they have access to a wider array of potential careers. And it may allow some of these students to be able to stay in the area a little bit better, too. There's only so many academic positions in South Dakota or in the surrounding area, but if there's possibilities to engage in companies in home-based biotech companies or government positions or some of the hospital systems, then that gives us the ability to keep some of our best and brightest around here.
Burrell says the skills students learn working on research projects are skills that are transferable to other types of questions and disciplines as well. He says for the purpose of the multimodal approach, looking at genetics, gut biome, and brain imaging is to have data that compares apples to apples. He says what is learned here can help many other disorders like depression, Alzheimer's disease. He says they're all interrelated.
Certain people with certain genetic predispositions may respond differently to the therapy. Same thing's probably happening with PTSD and depression. And so if we can start to, as one of the results of our multimodal tool, start to separate out different categories of patients, companies that are trying to develop their pharmacological therapies might enjoy better success if they're looking at a more pure patient pool, basically.
The ultimate goal for this project, according to Lee Ba, is to develop classification routines.
So you would be able to take someone that you've never interacted with and tell the system, this person has a genetic profile that looks like this, their brain function looks like that, their cortisol levels look like this, and then have the system say whether they are likely to develop post-traumatic stress disorder or not.
Ba calls machine learning a black art in computer sciences. He says he's not sure why it always works, but it does.
By feeding a classification system enough data, it can actually begin to make predictions as to whether someone is likely to be in category A or category B based on those data points. And that's ultimately what we're looking for, because that's what's going to guide treatment. That's what's going to allow us to say, well, this person should have this form of treatment, or this person, they're, even though they've experienced a traumatic event, they're not likely to develop post-traumatic stress disorder, so we don't have to worry about them.
Ba says while the participants in this study may not benefit directly, the information from the data collected, he says, will lead to new therapies and treatments for years to come. For South Dakota Public Broadcasting, I'm Kara Hetland.